Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's 1 o'clock, and that means it's time for the big one. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Thanks to Nick Ashew for the update. Did you hear that Scott Brooks cut in Nick's update?
Yeah, man.
That was as close to going in as you can as a head coach on one of your players. I guess he was asked about helping get Otto Porter more involved or trying to get him more looks, and he basically just said, yeah, it's up to Otto to do that too. Because he's got to be willing to shoot when he gets the ball, and he's got to be able to create.
He had a moment last night. It was a small thing. They were already down 19 points, whatever it was, after Jan Mahimi threw a layup that bounced off the backboard so hard that it almost went to half court.
By the way, that really happened in the game last night.
Yeah, well, he pump faked and got two defenders in the air, so a 7-footer should just go up and dunk it, but he can't because his knees are terrible, and he is a contract albatross, and it's ruining the franchise. Anyway, he had a moment last night, Otto Porter did, where he came off a screen and was open. Wall hit him with a pass. Shoot the basketball, please. But he never even looked for it.
Right.
Never even looked for a shot, just immediately deferred and kicked it to the corner. It's sort of like, that's what Brooks is talking about. You just got $25 million, dude. And I know it's not supposed to be about the money and it's a different NBA climate, blah, blah, blah. Come on, dude. Come on, Otto Porter.
Look for your shoot.
Yeah.
Your shot.
If you were the walk-on at, you know, Kentucky that was in there for 2 minutes, you don't want to embarrass yourself because you haven't shot in 3 hours. Okay, fine. You're a starter. You're the third banana on this team. At a certain point, act like it.
Let's get to the AFC title game between two teams who have been acting as if all year, and it's why they're the two teams standing as the AFC prize is up for grabs. Who's going to the Super Bowl? Jags at Patriots. Blake Bortles knows if Jacksonville loses and he doesn't play well, he's going to be the scapegoat. He says, though, getting to the Final Four, being a championship Sunday quarterback, does not mean that everyone's been wrong about him all year long. Here's what he had to say.
You know, I don't think so. You know, personally, you know, I don't care. I look at it as, you know, it's an incredible opportunity to continue to be able to play football at this time of year. And I think it's pretty awesome and special to be able to, you know, share this with the group of guys we got in that locker room, because I think everybody knows it's not going to be the same group next year. You know, guys can go at any time. So I think to kind of enjoy, you know, continuing to play football, obviously, you know, for the longest that we have in a long time, and enjoy it with these guys every single day. You know, we're one of four teams that gets to come out and practice, you know, on a Wednesday today, and that's special. I mean, it's something that everybody dreams of, and it's something that everybody works towards. So for us to be able to be here and be in this position, it's pretty awesome.
I love the way Bortles has handled himself all year.
I do too,
it's not
actually
easy to be the worst player on a good team and be the reason it goes wrong every time and very rarely get any credit when you do well. And when he plays a good game, it's, yeah, because they did all these things to help him play a good game. It's never just, Blake Bortles wasn't terrible today.
Because he had a nice stretch towards the end of the season, and everyone was just sort of like, can you guys believe that Blake Bortles isn't ruining everything for Jacksonville? I mean, that's the bar of expectation.
We all just kind of waited for the shoe to fall.
Yeah, he knows he's a passenger, and I think he's embraced that role. Now, we disagree, but I thought it was laughable that he invoked LeBron James as a comparison, but I guess the general point of, no matter what I do, I'll be criticized, I guess that was fine, but
yeah.
It basically implied that, yeah, I could be really good, and you're not. You're a disaster. You're the worst player on the team, and you're in a key role.
There's a rallying cry for Jacksonville, though, where they stand up to support him, and his teammates come to his rescue publicly all the time.
They're doing the right things.
He says it's pretty cool to see that.
Yeah, and
that type of stuff.
Oh, sorry, bud. Go ahead, play that. My fault, Tommy.
That type of stuff for me is big, you know, because you know, I don't care much, I guess, about what is said outside of our locker. You know, what I care about is in that locker room, and those are the opinions I care about, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. So when other people say stuff or when it comes from anywhere, you know, it doesn't bother me. But to see, you know, guys within that locker room stand up for me and say stuff is pretty cool, because those are the opinions that I value and the guys, you know, that I want to impress and do well for. So I think anytime you get, you know, a guy like that, you know, to stand up is awesome. And, you know, I do the same thing for him in a heartbeat.
And he was saying what I was going to say before I stepped on the cut, like a jackass, like a first-time radio donkey. But the point that I'm making is they're all handling this exactly right. They're not letting the outside noise dictate. They're the ones that are making the noise. They're on the same page. They're all pulling the rope in the same direction. a Tom Coughlin specialty, by the way. Organizational culture, it's weird how that kind of thing can matter. But everybody has said the right things. The guys that are on Team Bravado or Team Bravado, Jalen Ramsey. The guys that are, we're all in this together, Calais Campbell, veteran leadership style. Everybody for Jacksonville, to me, has handled this newfound success exactly the way that you should.
I agree, and you could tell they're really coming together as a team in these postseason press conferences as they're having to answer tougher and tougher questions. And when you're winning, that's not always the case, but they're winning in a way that people don't expect you to win.
Right.
And that's why they're getting questioned and grilled about their quarterback, and every week they're getting doubted, and they seem to be rallying with that. Doug Marrone's their head coach. A lot of people feel like he was going to have some sit-downs with Tom Coughlin, maybe lean on him a little more than he normally does. The president of the football operation, because Coughlin always had Belichick's number in the playoffs, beat him in two Super Bowls. Marrone said that was not the case, that it was business as usual this week, and Coughlin was no more involved than he normally is.
Your memory of those two Super Bowls, what stands out for you most when you see the way that that Tom's team was able to prevail against Bill on the big stage?
I haven't watched them. Seriously.
Really?
If I'm not in it, I don't usually – if I'm not in the Super Bowl, I usually don't watch it.
Unless I have to.
I'm sorry. But David Tyree made a great catch. He's a Syracuse guy.
That's funny. Of course, Marrone was the head coach at Syracuse before coming back to the league and getting the job in Jacksonville. He gave the Patriots the respect you'd expect him to. I mean, he comped them to some of the great sports teams in recent history on the professional ranks.
I've seen people do a lot of different things and not really have a lot of success. You know, so, you know, you got to just, you know, put yourself in what you feel is the best position. But like I said, this team outside of the New York Yankees, you know, is probably the best, you know, dynasty that you've seen. I mean, they're an outstanding football team. I don't think I can come in here and give you guys any, you know, hey, if you do this, you have a chance. If you do this, you have a chance. You've got to go and you have to execute, you know. And you're talking about a team that is probably the best execution, you know, team performance-wise on Sunday, you know, and since, you know, 2001.
Yankees, he's talking about like late 90s, early 2000s, into, you know, the first decade of the 2000s, I guess. Mm-hmm. San Antonio Spurs had a memorable run in the NBA. It's been nothing else like this, and it's harder to do in football. The Patriots, from a professional sports standpoint, will look back at this 50 years from now and say, that was the best we saw.
That's why I always say this is the most impressive dynasty of all time. It, different eras where you just had better players, like AKA, you know, you go Celtics back in the day, Lakers back in the day, UCLA, you know, whatever you want to call it. This is an era of the ultimate parity. The only same ingredients are the owner, the head coach, and the quarterback. Everybody else has changed over multiple times, whether it's receivers, running backs, tight ends, offensive linemen, defensive players, doesn't matter. They continue to turn
coordinators
out.
Coordinators on both sides of the ball.
And that's my point. It's been absolutely
Charlie Weiss was the genius,
amazing.
Then Josh McDaniels, then he was gone, now he's back.
It's been absolutely amazing. And I think, again, Marrone and the Jaguars are handling this correctly. We're not going to pretend this is somebody else. We're not going to apologize and say, but it's that balance of saying, we're not going to shrink. We're going to try to do what we do best. A lot of people have tried to beat them, maybe doing something different. We're not going to be, oh, thank you for letting us play you, my lord. We're so grateful to be on the field with you. We're cannon fodder now. No, we're going to go out and do Jaguar stuff. They're great, but you know what? We got to play 60 minutes. Let's see what happens.
How much studying's Belichick going to do of past games against the Jags as they've been turning themselves into this defensive juggernaut, or even, you know, him against Coughlin in the playoffs? Doesn't sound like much.
Your players just came up to the podium and said that you tell them the locker room experience means nothing.
Well, it doesn't.
Why not? Why don't you think experience helps?
Because they're talking about how the teams are going to compete on Sunday. That's what's going to determine the winner in that competition. It's what happened Sunday, not what happened last year, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, or 15 years, whatever it was, 1996, whatever it is. I mean, those games don't make any difference. With all due respect.
I love that.
To Diana Rossini.
Those games don't make any difference. Belichick doesn't believe that the Jags' offense isn't good, by the way.
They're really good at everything. Offensively, they're at the top of the league in a lot of categories, points, yards rushing, points after turnovers, yards per completion. All these guys got a big completion average. defensively, is again, top of the league of it and everything. Starting with turnovers, sacks, negative plays, points, you name it.
One of the things I always love about the Patriots weeks like this, their players become mini Belichicks, where they all say the same thing Belichick does. Like, every coach is going to say the pass doesn't matter. His players seem to really buy in and believe that.
They do, yeah.
This was Gronk when he was asked about experience.
That's great and all, but I mean, he reminds us all the time. I mean, experience sometimes doesn't mean anything. And what means a lot is preparing hard this week and preparing how we have been the whole year and keep on doing what we're doing, working hard, starting up on our opponents. And that's what's big. That's what's crucial. And going out and playing good on Sunday. I mean, no matter what the experience is a player has, I mean, I've seen many games where a team with zero playoff members from the previous beat teams with many experience in the playoffs. So you got to keep preparing. You got to keep working hard. And it's all about who goes out there Sunday and is ready to go.
Do your job. That's the refrain. That's how you get there. So guys with experience can do the job. Guys without experience can do the job if you have a simple set of tasks to achieve. And they're able to do that better than everybody else. There's no magic formula. Sometimes it's you want the most experience in the playoffs. Color commentators love to tell you about how much playoff experience matters. Well, sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't, though. You know what I mean? It's the Patriots mantra there of that day, inexperience can certainly beat experience and vice versa. I'm all for that sort of belief. You go, their opponent's pretty good. By the way, the stuff they were saying about Jacksonville really isn't true. Their pass offense is dreadful.
Right.
They're 11th in the league in yards per completion because their screen game is good. That's not a good passing offense. But still, you respect your opponent. You prepare to beat them. You do Patriot things, they'll be fine.
Joe Gibbs style. You
exactly
never
right,
would have
yeah.
thought the Redskins weren't playing the best team in the league in 2.0 when Joe Gibbs was talking about, we got the Browns this weekend. They're as good as there is in the league. It's going to be a tough one.
They've been
I
close.
Mean, that was his whole gimmick. And it works. Players buy in when they respect their coach. And, well, you got Lombardi trophies to show for it.
Yeah, good respect level there.
That's going to happen. You hear from Bortles. You hear from Marone. You hear from Belichick and Gronkowski. How about the NFC side of things next? What's being said as the Eagles get ready to host the Vikings? Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Closing in on the end of a short week and another big Sunday in the NFL. Championship Sunday looms. We're Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Bottom of the hour, 12 minutes from now, Tim Bontemps of the Washington Post joins us. Try to make some sense of what is going on with the Wizards. How come they can't get out of their own way against bad teams? But right now, let's put the Vikings and the Eagles, NFC title game, under the bright lights, in the spotlight as we get you set for kickoff. Stephon Diggs has been producing week in and week out for Minnesota out of the slot, makes big plays for them, scored the game-winning 61-yard touchdown, catapulting all of Minnesota into euphoria. He was talking this week about a turning point this season, and really the Vikings knowing that they had a chance to win as soon as Case Keenum took over because of his calmness.
As soon as they said he was going to be a quarterback, you know, I felt like we were going to be fine. It didn't really matter. I didn't have like a time period like week six or week seven. Like we'll be fine. Like nah. Since day one, you know, I had all the belief in him. I felt like he could get a job done. He prepared the right way. He does things the right way. So I had all the confidence in him. Wasn't worried.
You know where that confidence came from? Not that you knew he was going to go out and throw 22 touchdowns against seven picks the rest of the way or have 3,500 yards and a 98 rating. You knew your team's really good. You knew that you and Adam Thielen would make plays if he got you the football. You knew that you had two running backs that were terrific even after losing Dalvin Cook.
Right.
You knew that you had a great offensive line and a sensational defense that could rush the quarterback. You don't need your quarterback to do all that much, and I think that gives you the confidence that if you need Case Keenum to be spectacular, you probably feel like this season's over.
Yeah, you're not playing anymore.
If you just need him to hand the ball off a bunch and make a couple throws and be athletic every now and then, he can do that. A lot of guys can do that.
He threw the ball 481 times this year. By comparison, the typical NFL quarterback now is throwing it 600 times. That's all you need to know. It's an average of 7 to 10 less attempts per game because they can run, because their defense puts them in good spots. They turn you over, they stop you, get you extra possessions. He was not asked to do an awful lot, and he didn't do an awful lot. He did enough. Basically, you go, make five plays a game for us, Case. Five plays, that three of which any quarterback living on this planet could probably make most of the time, and then just find a way to make two. Convert us one extra third down. Scramble around and dump a pass to Kyle Rudolph that's a bit off schedule. Other than that, man, if you punt, it's a win for us.
You
because
know what
it means our defense is back on the field.
Last year is Dak Prescott. Now, different styles of players.
Different style, yeah.
Because you designed a unique offense for Dak in some ways with some read option, but that's to me what this reminds me of. Dak as a rookie, when the Cowboys were the number one seed and playing at home in the playoffs, just like Minnesota has been, going on the road for the first time now. But just a better defense. Minnesota is a better version of what Dallas tried to be last year. Everson Griffin's a big part of that defense. One of the most underrated players in the NFL. He knows everyone's going to be talking Keenum all week long, but that's not the story as to whether or not they're going to get to the Super Bowl.
It's going to come down to the tail of two defenses. They have a good offense. You know, they got a good running game, so we got to go in, stop the running game, make them one dimensional, and we got to make Nick Foles win the game. You know, that's our. We got to make him win the game, but we got to stop the running game, affect him, and give the ball back to our offense much as possible, so they can score points But it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be. You know, this is my first time being in this position, so I'm gonna go out there and give it all I got and to help my team win.
I love that he just said publicly for everyone to hear.
FYI,
we've got to make Nick Foles win the game. We all know it. To hear him say it is just funny because Minnesota's making no bones about it. If Foles has to beat us, we're probably playing in the Super Bowl. Keenum says last week, 61-yard touchdown. Giddy moment with his teammates. He learned a lot.
You know, it's another experience, and it was my first playoff experience, and you know, it's something that I've said all year that I learn from every experience that I'm in, and I definitely learned a lot from that. I learned a lot from from the emotions I felt to how I handled it to how I prepared, and something that I applied this week, and I'm continuing to apply to this next game.
Mike Zimmer said after the win, they weren't supposed to manage against New Orleans. How his team responded in the days thereafter and leaving that behind them was going to be pivotal. He was asked just yesterday whether or not his team allowed the craziest finish in playoff history to linger.
We understand the magnitude of this football game, and it's 3 days ago, so it's time to get on to Philadelphia and understand the things we have to do. I think our players are smart enough to understand what's going on. So I don't see any problem.
It's one of the great qualities of good teams, good organizations. Know thyself. Know who you are. Know how your bread is buttered. Minnesota knows what they are. They're a team that will beat you up with defense, that will run the football against you, wear you down, and make, just enough plays in the passing game to do it. They know what they're about. This game, to me, is going to come down to what the defensive ends of Minnesota, Hunter and Everson Griffin, who we already heard from, do against the tackles and how Philadelphia schemes it up. Do you keep a tight end to block? Do you keep Burton in there? Do you chip with a running back, Griffin and company? Do you limit some of what you do in the passing game for that? It's basically no Jason Peters. The other side, Lane Johnson is a good football player, but it's the guy that Ryan Kerrigan ate his sack lunch every day he came to work, Vitae. I can't say the guy's first name.
Vitae Onomatopoeia.
Yeah, Vitae sounds like something that I can't say. That's the matchup, and that's, I think, where it's going to happen. If Philadelphia has a similar offensive output to what they did this past week against Atlanta, they ain't winning. They've got to find a way to do more against Minnesota this week. Conversely, I think Minnesota can just keep leaning, just keep doing what they do, and eventually they'll beat Philadelphia. They'll wear them down in the second half.
Nobody in this game, nobody playing this weekend, will have more pressure on them than Nick Foles. I would put him narrowly ahead of Blake Bortles. Because Foles has inherited this Super Bowl-bound roster that was the best in the NFC.
It's a great operation.
And basically everyone, if they don't get there, is just going to say, if only we had Carson Wentz. Mm-hmm. He says that the fact he's going to get to play his former teammate with the Rams, Jeff Fisher had both of them, at one point as backups, in St. Louis, is evidence that no one should ever quit on anything.
It's pretty wild. Absolutely. I mean, we were on the same team not, too many years ago. But that's where, I know, I've said over and over again, Case's success and the way he plays doesn't surprise me because him and I were together and we prepared together. We're around each other every day. But I think the big message there is no matter what happens, you just got to keep believing in yourself, keep working hard, and just, never give up.
So, Nick Foles, all of Philadelphia is counting on you. The entire country is going to be watching, waiting for you to fail.
Good luck, bro.
It's a lot of pressure on one dude. What's the key for you thriving this weekend?
You play this game long enough, you're going to have all sorts of games. The key word is rhythm, and how do you get rhythm is the question. And I think it's when you're just reacting and playing, you're not thinking. I mean, anytime you do something great, there's not much going on in your mind. You're not having to assess it. You're just playing. Thinking and all that is for during the week when we go out there to practice. You got to think through new plays. You got to think through seeing these new coverages, new looks. But then when you get to the game, I think that's where you just have to trust it and just go play.
Don't think, just play. I actually do want to see the dude play well because I think it's a great story. He was a Jag who's a backup, and now you got a chance to go play in a Super Bowl. I'll always love that. I know he plays for the Eagles, and that annoys you.
Yeah.
But I want him to play well. I want Keenum to play well. I want Bortles to play well. Just because these guys are probably never going to be in this situation again.
Yeah, the sun shines on a dog's you know what some days. I don't want Foles to play well because it means the Eagles might have a chance. But I see your point. I mean, he had that 27-2 stretch, that 27 touchdown, 2-pick stretch, and everyone thought he was the next big deal, etc. Saying trusted is a nice thing. Here's what you shouldn't trust: throwing towards Xavier Rhodes. Whoever Xavier Rhodes is covering, don't throw that guy the football because you'll lose it because you're not good enough to thread the needle right there. You've got to find somebody else. I think this is a Doug Peterson. How smart are you? Can you craft some things that Minnesota hasn't seen? Can you do some things this week that aren't on game film, break tendency, go against type in certain ways? I think you've got to see a version of that early season Kansas City offense. Remember that one where everything was a fake on a fake on a fake, and it's a misdirection, this, that, and the other thing. You get the ball to a guy in space. You've got to find a way to get Minnesota countered, going to the opposite direction. If you let them play straight up and run to the football, that defense is going to shove it where that sun isn't able to go. I think they've got to find a way to scheme around Foles' weakness, which are large.
72 hours from now, we're settling into the recliners. We're getting the chips and dip, sodas spread around us, ready to go. 3 days from championship football. Grant and Danny on the Fan, the Wizards aren't playing championship basketball. Let's try to dissect why with Tim Bontemps of the Washington Post next. You're listening to the Fan.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Another game against a bad team, another loss for the Wizards. This one, in a season defined by defensive ineptitude, probably rock bottom. Charlotte came into the game 17th in scoring, 21st in offensive efficiency. They scored 38 points in the first quarter, 77 at the half, 133 in the game. The Wizards hadn't allowed that many points at halftime since 2006. It was a franchise high in points for Charlotte. Tim Bontemps covers the NBA for the Washington Post, joins us now to try to make some sense of what's going on with the Wiz defensively on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Tim, where should we start? Why can't this team defend 16 straight games they've given up a hundo, worst in the NBA?
Well, that's a great question. They, for whatever reason, reasons that I can't understand and seemingly no one else can either, they have done a really terrible job of playing consistent basketball this season. There'll be some nights where they get up and they play as well as anybody in the league. And then there's other nights, like last night, where they play as poorly as anybody in the league. And it's really been maddening. And, you know, to me, the most interesting thing that happened yesterday was Scott Brooks coming out and saying, hey, we've got to change some things. This is unacceptable. If your coach says that and it doesn't change anything, it basically rules them out as being somebody you can really listen to about this kind of stuff. So the way I look at it is I'm fascinated to see what they do on Friday. Do they change the starting lineup? Do they not play somebody? Do they do something drastic to try to jumpstart this team? Because that would both, you know, validate what Scott said. It also would be interesting to see what exactly he chooses to change, because that to me would signal what they think the real problem is with this group.
Yeah, where should Wizards fans focus their ire? They got to pick one thing. Is it Otto Porter's kind of regression? I know that's a health-related issue. Is it Markieff Morris? Is it the center position? Is it John Wall's numbers being as bad as they've been since his rookie year? I think that's a health thing as well. Where should Wizards fans be, I guess, most upset, Tim, if they can only circle one thing?
I don't know if they're – I mean, I don't think you really can circle one thing. I mean, I think this is a team-wide problem, right? I mean, you could be mad at the leaders of the team, John and Brad, for not, you know, having the guys ready every night. You can be mad at Scott Brooks for the same reason. You can be mad at kind of inconsistent play from, you know, the rest of the supporting cast. I mean, I don't think this is a, hey, this is, there's one problem that has to get fixed, you know? Like, I think this is clearly at this point, this clearly at this point is bigger than that. And that's why the Wizards are in the position where they're in now, where they should be. They should have four or five more wins than they do, maybe more than that. And that's the difference between them being a team that's fighting for a top three seed in the East and a team that could be on the road to start the playoffs. And that's a pretty massive difference, especially when you consider, you know, the expectations for where this team were, both at the start of the season and particularly after Gordon Hayward got hurt. It looked like they could really challenge to be the best team in the East in the regular season at minimum. And instead, they're kind of floundering in the middle of the pack.
Tim Bontemps does a great job covering the NBA at the Washington Post, formerly of the New York Post, and has covered the NBA well for several years. I'm curious, Tim, about, you mentioned maybe some changes coming down the pike and what they're going to do in the next couple games, but the stance I have, and I want you to blow me out of the water if you think I'm wrong. I think that in the NBA, I wouldn't say this about football or other team sports, but if you have the combination of Wall and Beal, who like to think that they are the Eastern Conference's version of what the Warriors have in the West, they shouldn't get beat by bad teams as often as they do. That last night should never happen, basically. Once in a blue moon, and it happens all the time. Is that oversimplified?
No, it's not oversimplified. That's really what it comes down to, right? If those guys are as good as they think they are, and I think most people in the league think they are, they shouldn't be this bad. And they have a good supporting cast, and they have a good coach. I mean, they shouldn't be doing this yo-yo act anymore, right? They should have moved beyond this. And I think that's why you see the whole, that's why I think you see so much frustration, you know, about what's going on with them, because this just is not the way it should be anymore. They should be better than this. They should have moved to being a more consistent team. And the fact that they're not is both concerning and frustrating for, you know, not just the fans, but I think pretty clearly for the people involved, which is why you see Scott Brooks, who, you know, as we know, is not exactly a fire and brimstone guy, coming out and really calling his team out last night. I mean, that's why I'm curious to see what happens tomorrow, because that's not the kind of stuff you hear normally from Scott Brooks. And for him to say that, you know, to me points to him really thinking there's a problem. And now it's up to him to show exactly what he's going to do something about it.
Yeah, I think he's got to follow through. I'd expect a couple changes. Otherwise, you're right, Tim. I think it's just kind of empty promises at this point. How much of this do you think is Brooks related? There's some NBA voices that are, you know, Brooks naysayers when they talk about, hey, it's you know, offensive minded, but this has kind of been his MO is, you know, after a certain amount of time, I don't know what this guy's tuning him out or whatever, but the same language doesn't have the same effect anymore. How much of this do you think is a Brooks issue? Some people would say it's a lot.
I mean, look, I don't mean to sound redundant, but I don't think you can point this at any one thing. I think everybody deserves blame. I think John and Brad deserve blame. I think Scott deserves blame. I think, you know, guys like Markieff Morris and Marcin Gortat and Otto Porter deserve blame. I think just about everybody on the team deserves blame for being so inconsistent, right? I mean, like I said, if this was so clearly a specific thing, you could fix it easily. You know, I think that's the problem, is that it's more of a overall team issue, and that's what makes it to me difficult and interesting to see what they do, because I don't think there is an easy fix. You know, if it was like, hey, Scott Brooks is the worst coach in the league, okay, you could move on from Scott Brooks if you wanted to. I don't think that's the case. You can say, oh, John and Brad are overrated, we need to trade one of them. I don't think that's the case either. So, I mean, that's why they're just in a weird place, and I don't really know what the fix is. I mean, I think personally what they're going to do is start Kelly Oubre instead of Markieff Morris. That small lineup with Otto Porter, the two guards, and Marcin Gortat has been awesome this season. It's outscoring teams by over 18 points per 100 possessions, which is awesome. So I think that's what they're going to do to try to jumpstart things, but you know, at the same time, that's not necessarily going to fix the overall problem of why is this team so maddeningly inconsistent and not showing up on a nightly basis.
I also think,
I don't think changing one guy in the starting lineup is going to fix that.
Sorry, I mean to cut you off there, Tim. I also think part of your point that's well seen, and I think it's a larger perspective, I think they're stuck. And that's, to me, that's a management issue. That's a, you know, you don't have many, many picks that are blossoming. You've got Uber, you've got Satoransky, some contributors in that regard, but the salary, you know, to the two centers that aren't really producing at a very high level at this point, I don't see too many avenues for improvement. What might management be able to do, if anything, without, again, kind of mortgaging another first-round pick as we go here, deferring their future?
Well, I think that's a little unfair, because I think I would give Oubre more credit than just kind of blossoming. I mean, I think probably the brightest spot of the season is he's looked terrific. And I think you talk to people around the league, and he looks like a guy that's really taken a nice step forward. And it's a reminder that when you draft a 19-year-old guy who struggles a bit as a rookie, that sometimes it's good to let him have some time to develop, right? Because he's really become a key piece for them. Now, I think that if you look at, you know, kind of where the Wizards are at as a whole, obviously the Amahimi contract does not look good, right? But at the same time, when they signed him to that contract that summer, everybody around the league thought he was the best player available. And that's not just like a Wizards thing. And at the time, I thought that was a better contract for them to sign than, say, signing Ryan Anderson for $80 million over 4 years. And Anderson went to Houston and has played really well in D'Antoni's system, and Mahimi has basically been a disaster from when he got there. So could you see a situation where the Wizards try to move off of his money and get another player in? Yeah, maybe. But I think a lot of teams are trying to do that, and it's going to be tough. And I think overall the trade market this year is probably going to be pretty dead, so at least as it stands now. So my guess is, I mean, look, we thought this team was going to be really good when the season started. So did people around the league. Yep. This is not just like a Washington thing. I mean, people around the league thought, hey, the Wizards really have a chance to take a step this year. And when, like I said, when Gordon Hayward went down, it looked like they were the favorites to really challenge to be the best team in the East at minimum in the regular season. And that's why I think you see so much frustration internally that's showing now about the way they're playing, because this was not how this season was supposed to go. This was supposed to be, okay, we played, whatever, 58-win ball over the last 70 games last year after the 2-8 start, and we have everybody back, we have continuity, we have our coach, we're building forward, we're going to be really darn good this year. And instead, they've taken a step back and been more inconsistent. And that's why I'm really curious to see how the next couple games go, because they're, you know, they have a lot of questions they have to try to answer between now and the trade deadline to see if they do need to go do something. And I think that starts tomorrow in Detroit.
All right, I don't want to keep you too long. I know you're busy, but one final thing I want to hit on is Oubre's future then, with about a minute left here. I love your assessment of Oubre. I think that's 100% correct. My fear is that he's gone this offseason after you paid Otto Porter. I don't know how they keep him. And if that is the case, you tell me if it is. Is he the only asset that you would then have to move if you wanted to do something this year? How do they keep Oubre for the future?
Well, I mean, for starters, he's signed through next season, so he's definitely around at least next season. And I think at that point, you know, Markieff Morris comes off the books. Gortat comes off the books. Mahimi's an expiring contract. They could easily move some money around and keep him.
So there is a pretty easy future you can see where Oubre is a piece for them for a while.
I think so, but I also think if you look at them this summer, and let's say they try to make a run at DeMarcus Cousins in a sign-and-trade, right? I think if I think Oubre, I could see him going out as some kind of a package to get a third guy to play with John and Brad. And that's just me speculating, obviously. I'm sure the blogs will not go crazy that I'm saying that they're going to trade Oubre for DeMarcus, and I'm not. But I think they're certainly not actively looking to move him, and I don't think that finances are going to dictate that he's going to have to leave. So I don't think that's the case at all. It's just a matter of how they build their team going forward. And if he does end up being used as a bargaining chip to get, you know, another big time player to play with their guards.
Tim, great segment.
You. Yeah, that was awesome, buddy. Thank you, man. Really appreciate it. Let's do it soon.
Absolutely, guys. Well, coming on. Thanks for having me.
See Tim Bontemps of the Washington Post. Always good with us on Grant and Danny. Some good insight, some good content on the Wizards for you there. You're listening to The Fan.
Folks, Danny Rouillet for my guys at Tedbert Ford. Go see them. Just do it. Do what I have done not one time, but two times. I love Tedbert Ford. Got my 2017 Ford Fusion in 2017. I drive that all over the place. She's downstairs right now, charging up. Love it, right? Also got a 2016 Ford Edge. Got that one in 2016. Plenty of great deals right now at Tedbert Ford. But I want to talk about all the deals because you get 130% Kelley Blue Book value for your trade-in. You can get up a Fusion, a 2018 Fusion for as low as $150 a month for a lease deal. I want to talk about Tedbert for Life. It's lifetime vehicle coverage. Here's what that means. You go to Tedbert Ford, you get your brand new ride, right? It's new to you. After you get your great value for a trade-in, they take care of you for life. That's how they know. It's the best way to get you to come back. That's what they want. They want you to come back. They want you to feel welcome. It's all the big stuff, the powertrain, the engine, transmission, transfer case, the drive axle, all the big things. Little stuff. They'll replace your battery once every few years. Windshield replacement. You crack it, they fix it. Complimentary service loaner program is incredible. It's top-notch. I've done this myself a couple different times over. Could not be more convenient. And they'll do Virginia State inspection for you. They'll get it done. Go see my guys at Tedbert Ford. And when you do, tell them Danny sent you.
.7 The Fan Live, version 2.0, is coming to Leesburg. The event's all sold out. It sold out in like a week.
It really did.
It's been sold out for several weeks. The event is next Friday night. There is still one way in, though, and that is by listening to Chad Dukes versus the World this afternoon at 5:20 for your chance to win a pair of tickets presented by the Purple Heart Foundation. Details at thefandc.com/live. Chad Dukes versus the World about 10 minutes away. If you missed any part of today's show, it was a good one. You can go to grantanddanny.com/audio for our conversations with Albert Breer on the NFL playoffs, what's going to happen with Kirk Cousins, and we just discussed the Wizards' woes with Tim Bontemps. But also, nice little discussion with our listeners on Baker Mayfield going to the Redskins at 13th, according to a Mel Kiper mock draft.
Do you think, you know, we always have such a hard time gauging what the general reaction is, because we always hear from vocal on either side of any issue, whether it's quarterback or otherwise, right? What do you think the rank and file Redskins fan? So just like Redskins fan Alpha, whatever his name is, like maybe he's got some tickets, maybe he doesn't.
His name is Stuart.
He's just a regular guy named Stuart who likes the Redskins. Do you think he's oh yeah, cool, Baker Mayfield? Or do you think he's like, no way? What do you think the regular fan sides? You know, I'm trying to ask.
I would want more information on regular fan, but basically, I think the average interest. Hey, the Redskins are on. I'll watch the game because the average fan is not. I don't think the person listening to our show.
That's what I mean.
The person listening to our show is extra plugged in, cares a lot more, mm-hmm. uber passionate.
Right.
That person is probably going to be less likely to be excited about Baker Mayfield. The person who goes to FedEx 8 times a year or 5 and gives up their tickets a couple times, who wears a jersey but who doesn't listen to sports talk radio during the week and the Redskins are just kind of something they set aside on Sundays, that person who can't name their offensive line but knows that Trent Williams plays on the team, doesn't know what number he is, that person is going to be excited when they hear Baker Mayfield to the Redskins because they've heard of Baker Mayfield, because they know he won the Heisman Trophy, because they know he almost won a national championship. So they're going to be pretty excited.
Yeah, it's a big name. That's what I'm always wondering about that, because you and I have always disagreed about what percentage of the fan base like was still hardcore Robert Griffin even after it wasn't fashionable to be so. Once everybody else knew that it was over, they didn't know because they're so vocal. It makes it seem like it's a bigger
percentage. Yeah, I think it's like
percentage
5 to 10% of the fan base. Mm. What do you think it is?
I always thought it was a little bit higher than that. I always thought it was like 15 to 20, but that's neither here nor there. That's years ago. I think people would be excited. I think the average or median, whatever you want to call it, Redskins fan would be excited about a new quarterback just because it's
sure
a high draft pick.
I don't think that means necessarily that you're excited that Kirk Cousins is gone. Like, I'd like Kirk Cousins to be here. I now know that it's not going to work out, that there is no happy ending here, and that they're only going to pay too much money. So I can say it's time to move on, and also that I'd be excited to try again at quarterback in the same sentence, while saying you screwed up and you should have had Cousins. One of the social media trends of the last couple weeks, there's bad and good that comes on social media,
mm-hmm.
is that fans take to like all of these GoFundMes and some of these places where you can raise money for players on other teams that help them out. So you saw this when Andy Dalton and the Bengals beat the Ravens in week 17, that a bunch of Bills fans flooded Andy Dalton's charity account to pay him a bunch of money.
And that was cool.
Saints punter Thomas Morstead got hurt in the opening of the playoff game that those teams played this past weekend. Played all game long on broken ribs, punting, grabbing his chest the entire time, looked like he was in so much pain. Then, when players had to come back out, remember the stupid, antiquated, dumb rule where the game was over, Stephon Diggs had the walk-off touchdown, throws his helmet in the air, everyone goes nuts on the field for 5 minutes and then leaves. They had to come back out to kick the extra point still because otherwise the game is not finished.
Right.
So they needed to get some of the Saints out of the locker room. Well,
they needed 8. You needed a minimum of 8.
My guy Cameron Jordan, team captain, one of the best guys on the planet, one of the great players on the team after one of the worst moments of his career, comes walking out and goes and stands there as they kick the extra point, which was an awesome move. But Thomas Morstead, the punter,
played defensive tackle,
who had the broken ribs, lined up at D-tackle over top of the center, basically. Yes, he can't. So next to the center. For the extra point. Point is, Vikings fans made huge donations to him and to his charity.
So cool.
For playing through the game with broken ribs and coming back out. As of Thursday morning, Vikings fans had donated, this is about when we went on the air today, so the numbers I'm sure higher, $150,000 to his What You Give Will Grow charity.
So cool.
The latest in a growing trend of NFL fan base is showing appreciation for players on opposing teams.
So cool.
Love it.
So, so cool. That's awesome. By the way, that is an archaic rule, and so much money changed hands by the Vikings not kicking that extra point, by the way.
Yeah.
So they ended up not covering. Absolutely remarkable. It's why I will not gamble on sport games. I don't. I play FanDuel. I'll bet on some certain players, small amounts of money. So many bad beats in that game. Think about it. You're rejoicing because they could score a touchdown. They kick the extra point. They cover. Oh, my God, now they didn't cover. Can you imagine? Can you imagine?
I cannot, but luckily I had no horse in that race, my friend. For Danny, I'm Grant saying so long and thanks, as always, for listening. We'll do it again tomorrow at 10 a.m. Spread the word. It's a pretty fun way to spend your day, right? Right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah?
Uh-huh.
Everybody?
All right.
Got to spread the word.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.